Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everyone. It is the Red Men Originals podcast. I'm Paul Machin, Chris Page, Chloe Bloxham, Dan Club. Join me for this one. Liverpool beat Brentford by 4-1 at the weekend. It was lovely. We're going to be talking about that. We're going to be discussing injuries, the cup final, and Luton in midweek. Probably not in that order, but who knows. But before we dive into a couple of things to draw your attention to, we are going on tour. You may know this. If you don't, then hi, let me tell you about us going on tour. We're going to Belfast, we're going to Dublin, and we're going to London as well, which is...
In that order?
Yes. Yeah. Cool. Right, sounds... Ticketmaster.ie if you want to find the tickets to the Belfast or Dublin shows. Absolutely flying at the moment, which is really, really pleasing. I was given an update on the numbers and it made me smile. So that's good. They're going to be absolute belters. And then London, we're at the Indigo at the O2. You can get them on AXS.com. And I'll be honest, you can get them on Ticketmaster as well. But we were told to say that. But if you're already on Ticketmaster, just find them on Ticketmaster. right, sounds. Less people going to London so far. So come on, Cockneys, pull your fingers out, come and see us and have a party with us, and Keo will be good fun. Chris, before we talk about the match, you interviewed Jamie Carragher.
Last week.
How was that?
That last week was really good, actually. Obviously, we did a couple of videos with him. The one on YouTube's flying at the moment, views are going through the roof on it and stuff like that. We talked about Xabi Alonso for around about 25 minutes, which was fantastic. It was 25 minutes more than I expected to get of talk with Xabi Alonso. About Xabi Alonso with Jamie Carragher, he was absolutely fantastic. Some of the stuff that he was saying, wow. I mean, talking about Xabi Alonso being, did you listen to it? I take it where he talks about how he watched Championship football when he came to Liverpool, or yes. he came in with a dossier and gave it to Benitez about how the team could friggin' improve and stuff like that. And you're just like, what on earth is going on? So we did that. The full interview is available on redmenplus.com, and we did a League Cup final preview with him as well, which will be going out on Red Men Plus later on in the week. So yeah, absolutely fantastic. He's just so sound to give us his time and stuff like that. It was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, fully enjoyed it. I did.
There's 8 minutes or so, I think, on the YouTube channel now if you want to check some of the Xabi Alonso stuff. But yeah, if you want the rest of it, the full stuff, then do go over to redmenplus.com and sign up, because it is cup final week. It is easy to forget that as we live in our injury-ridden mire. But the Reds are counting down to Wembley. We've got loads of amazing stuff over there, so fill your boots. Let's do it, Dan. Dan Club.
Hi.
Hi. Okay. Brentford 1, Liverpool 4. Just a wonderful game of football. But part of the injuries, we'll come to that in due course. But I just thought Liverpool were really, really good.
Yeah, we were. Given sort of the... I think a lot of Liverpool fans, myself included, would have gone into that game with sort of an air of trepidation, given what went on last season. And we've been quite vulnerable from all the good stuff Brentford have had in terms of set pieces and stuff like that. They're their strengths, and they've been our weaknesses a little bit. Even whilst winning games, we have looked slightly uneasy from set pieces and stuff. So, yeah, I think given that, and given also the fact we are still missing key players even going into that game, it was a very Bisman-like performance from Liverpool as we reached the business end of the season. Really professional, full of quality, full of endeavour, and yeah, just a very pleasing afternoon's work on the face of it when you consider the goals that we scored are right at the top drawer. We'll come on to them in more detail. And yeah, to beat what is you know, still a decent Brentford team, still certainly at home, still a Brentford team that works hard and doesn't seem to ship loads and loads of goals. So to put four past them in the manner that we did and put a marker down for our rivals as well, I think was really, really impressive. Obviously, we'll talk about the fallout and sort of the more details, which aren't quite as impressive. But yeah, I thought as far as performances go, it was right out the top draw.
I agree with that. I don't know about you, Chloe, that there was a little bit of an undercurrent to this game because of, you know, at the moment we're living in that world, aren't we? Like, what's gonna undo us? What's gonna be the thing that kind of causes us to stumble or whatever? And Brentford seemed like a pretty good.
It's injuries, Paul, by the way.
Yeah.
Might well be that. Yeah.
But Brentford felt like it could well be that, and so you know, look, ultimately they actually started quite well, but I thought Liverpool got a grip on it, and once they got a grip on that, we never really looked back.
Yeah, and it was extremely impressive because it felt the longer the game went on, the better Liverpool got for me. It was like the injuries happened in the first half, and in the second half, it was like we turned up and thought, absolutely not. We're going to win for Diogo Jota. We're going to win for Curtis Jones, and we're, you know, going to put it in our own hands. It was like Liverpool were getting a little bit pissed off that seems like everything is going against us, especially with the fact that before kickoff, we were with Alisson Becker, and it was like, oh, Kelleher, is this the game that he really needs, you know, against a side that are going to try and bully you from set pieces? And Kelleher was superb. He was unbelievable. I'm glad he's got that bit of confidence as well for this weekend. He'll play Luton as well, I think. But yeah, it just seemed like Liverpool were just, he's had enough of all of the other things going against them and thought, no, it's down to us and we'll get ourselves through this. And it was a superb performance.
I just enjoy, I've had this a lot of late, just Liverpool are quietly just really good at the football. And the thing that struck me, Chris, was, I think we've kind of sort of generally spoken around it so far, the hallmarks of this side that are familiar to the ones of the most successful Liverpool side under Jurgen Klopp is almost like the narrative busting and teams that don't like to grab on to excuses to be shit. Now, we've watched countless Liverpool teams that just loved a good reason for what, you know, to feel sorry for themselves and not get over the line. This side appears to have just that little bit of
I mean, going into it, obviously, it's a 12:30 kickoff. Yes. It's Brentford away. You've had a couple of bad results there over the last couple of seasons. And that was enough for a late 90s side to just, we've had our excuses already. It's not enough for a Jurgen Klopp side. It's never been enough for a Jurgen Klopp side. It's like, well, no, this is just another obstacle for us to get over. And that's what Liverpool did. But this Liverpool side now, for me, what I love about it is that they're just going to work it out on the field. So I did think first 10, Brentford were really, really good and made it very, very difficult for us. And the best Jurgen Klopp side just work out a way. Before Jurgen's got to speak to them, before half-time, they work out a way to wrestle control of the game off them. And we did that brilliantly. I mean, you know, Thomas Frank talked about it after the game, how this is probably the best counter-attacking side or side in transition. That's what this Liverpool side are brilliant at. You know, it's why we go back to the goalkeeper. We want the team to come out and open up the space between the defence and the midfield and the attack for us to exploit. But it wasn't just on the transition. There was brilliant play in between the lines. You know, McAllister, an unsung hero again. You know, £35 million, what he's been able to do this season. We've all spoken about Szoboszlai, we've all spoken about Endo, we've all spoken about Conor Bradley. But McAllister's been there almost every single week doing what he can to learn a new position. And again, he's doing it now. I know it's his position, but he's making an impact. He's getting into the box. It's really good football. And he's just epitomised for me. All right, it's not worked out exactly how you want it this season, but make the best of it.
Yeah. Not like sort of coward. He's an interesting example of the whole game, I thought, because I thought he was, in the first half, I thought he was, I don't want to say poor, but like I just don't think he was very good. But he got into it. When Liverpool got a grip on the game, McAllister started doing what McAllister kind of does. And you forget sometimes that, yes, we bought him for that position, but he's never played it. You know, he just hasn't been in this side enough in his preferred positions. So obviously to then actually get a chance and warm into the game and have to be able to show what he can do. I don't expect him to all of a sudden become a 10-goal-a-season, you know, midfielder for us, but he's chipping away. And you know, at the moment, because of, you mentioned Szoboszlai there, Curtis Jones being out, Gravenberch is still warming into his role as a Liverpool midfielder. If Endo's there, then you know, we might actually find we've hit upon a mad little bonus in McAllister all of a sudden, because I've almost forgotten that he can be a good eight. So yeah,
it's not just what he does in the eight. I think it's what he's learnt in the six.
Yeah.
So I know Tony scores, but who's the lad throwing the body on the line in front of Tony? It's our eight, Alexis McAllister. Yeah. And he's dead unlucky not to get the block. He dies with his leg high and it goes underneath his leg. Yeah. That's the type of endeavour you want to see from an eight or something, isn't it? For all Szoboszlai's work back, I ain't seen Szoboszlai throwing a block in the six-yard box on a counter-attack goal.
I mean, you didn't see McAllister do it either.
I saw him throw one in. Just didn't complete it. It was an incomplete block, if you look at the Opta stats. And I think he's got one.
Check out the deep dive this week for more on that.
I have to get him back tomorrow. Give me 24 hours to look into that one. I'll come back and get you.
Dan, Diogo Jota, I just thought he was nailed on for Liverpool's man of the match. And, you know, it's easy to say, hard to say, I guess, with so little of the game ultimately played. But I keep reusing a Chloe-ism from a few weeks ago about, like, him dragging the ball up the pitch. Mm. Like, he pulls it, like it's glued to our goal. And but he did that about his whole game. He had gnarly, he had fight, like that, the pure determination to make things happen, getting stuck in. It was a very street fighting performance, which of course we recognise from Luis Diaz. Yeah. But yeah, I just thought he was brilliant, and that's before we even get onto that, the magic stuff that he added to the game as well.
Yeah, I thought he was exceptional in his 30 odd minutes on the pitch. But unfortunately, he's part of the collateral damage that comes with that game of footy. But yeah, I thought he was brilliant, as you say. And he loves those sort of environments whereby it is a little bit scrappy, it is a little bit feisty, and you do need to stand up and be counted. Diogo Jota, you can always rely on him for that, because he will get in amongst it. He's not afraid, he never takes a backward step. He's that type of footy player. And you, as you say, you're right, you blend that with all the qualities that he has as well. You've got yourself a really potent attacking weapon on a day like that. And obviously, he provides the assist for the goal as well, which just showed brilliant that physicality as well to get up and compete for the header, also win it. But the awareness of what he's doing in that moment is absolutely outstanding.
Stick with you, Dan. It's just genius, and it's one of those things. I think if you're not, like, I don't know, a deeper admirer of football, you can look at it and go, "It's just a guy adding the ball to another guy who's running."
It's so much more than
that. It's honestly, it's ridiculous.
I put it on par with the finish. I really do. That's how impressive.
I mean, that's fucking.
No. Listen, right.
I'm listening. I'm not gonna believe you.
He sees Virgil van Dijk kick the ball.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, me, in my world, I don't have the ability to do what Diogo Jota does, but I have the ability to know where the lamp is by my bedside table and turn the light off at the door and see if I can get there perfectly and turn the light switch on my lamp.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. This is, we're talking 5-6 yards and never get it exactly right. I always get the lamp, but never get the switch.
Yeah. You've lost me.
Diogo Jota sees Virgil van Dijk kick the ball over him and runs forwards.
Mm-hmm.
And bends his run without looking back where the ball is, because he sighted it from when Virgil kicked it, and then goes like that to try and watch the ball over his head. Mm. If you watch the NFL, they always say in the NFL, a ball coming over the head is the hardest ball in the NFL to catch, because you've got to sight it, you've got to then, in your head, do the physics of where the pass is going to get to and put your arms out for it.
Yeah.
Diogo Jota does it, sees it, and fucking somehow manages to locate Darwin Núñez in all of this and play it with the perfect weight that goes to Darwin Núñez's feet, and then holds his run so that he's an option. It was unbelievable.
I know.
Really was.
I'm literally still shocked when people go, people, and pop up behind the lens. I'm like, where the fuck have you just gone? Like, you're really like that.
I can attest to the over-the-shoulder thing playing cricket, obviously. Nigh on impossible to catch anything that's coming over your shoulder when you lose sight of it for a single second. It's just ridiculously hard. So yeah, I agree with you on that front. I still think the level of finish.
Just
so
here's the thing, though, right? I've seen loads of people chip the keeper. I've never seen anyone in football do that.
But this is Darwin Núñez we're talking about.
But I've never, I've been watching football for near 40 years.
Yeah.
I've never seen anyone do that before. It's not often you watch something in footy that you haven't seen before. You can always liken it to something. I've never seen it. It may have happened. I've never seen it.
Yeah. It's telling that I could, like, the greatest volley I've ever hit in my entire life,
I remember vividly was one coming, doing that thing, coming over your head and hitting it first time. And it was in the park and I hit the post. But it was such a, I've never ever come close to recreating that as a dropping ball over the
when you say hit the post, you mean tree?
The tree, yeah. 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 In the goal.
What I will say on that goal, actually, is even to this moment now, knowing what happened sort of with Nunes scoring in such style, I'd still like them to switch roles in that instance. Nunes could not hit the Jota because it's kind of the other way around. You'd want Nunes flicking the ball on and Jota being one-on-one, but as it turned out, it worked out all right.
But to be fair, again, almost to both of them, yeah, it's not meant to make sense. The bigger target man forward is meant to be the one who flicks it on, and Jota, who's supposedly our ice-cold killer centre-forward finisher, should be the one putting it away. But look, there's someone in the comments here says stop putting down the chip. Just to be clear, that's not what you're doing. You're just picking up the head of the ball.
The chip's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Hands up, by the way, if you were screaming to lay it on to Diogo.
No.
Yeah, I was screaming to lay it on to Diogo.
Maybe not so much the screaming it. It just seemed obvious that that's what he'd do because he's done that for the last year and a half. He's been like reasonable. Quite, in those situations, he's just squared it. Like if that's Salah running alongside him, I think he squares that. I don't think he thinks about taking that on for a second. But it's Darwin. I don't know whether he's decided it early or he's decided it late, and that's why it's like he's decided that he can't work when he's got too much time, so he's not going to make decisions until like the last touch.
And so what do you think he's thinking as he's running through? Da, 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 chip! Chip it!
I honestly probably like, you know, that bit in The Simpsons where he's Homer's on like the jury, and you know, I guess what I'm thinking, boy, and he's just thinking of like a little monkey like banging the cymbals together, like, you know, that. Honestly, nothing. I just don't think anything's going through his head. I think he's just thinking about stupid things. I can't think he's thinking about like, and I'm definitely going to do this and that. He's just mad. He's nuts. And I just love the fact that he's just, I fucking love him. He drives me absolutely up the wall. He is one of the most frustrating footballers I've ever witnessed in my entire life. But the more I watch of him, I don't think I'd swap it. It's just fucking gone one-on-one with the goalkeeper. And I'm sorry, if you thought he was burying that, you're fucking lying to us and yourself and whatever power above that you're hoping to get down with by the end of your life. And moreover, that he's going to then chip that, which is the most fucking stupid decision you could possibly make.
It's
in
so
that.
Bad.
The goalkeeper's
got 1,000 options and he shows the hardest.
It's impossible. What he's just done there is basically impossible. And that makes so it all bad. The more brilliant because we all still would probably say, if he tries to slot that, he's probably hitting the keeper or he's putting it wide or whatever. But he doesn't. He tries the most ridiculous, stupid up and down chip. The technique on that is,
yeah, it's unbelievable.
Out of this world.
It's
unbelievable. Yeah, it's beyond audacious. It's like Suarez doesn't do that. Suarez would have done something equally cool, but that's not like, I've seen brilliant footballers play for us. I've not seen anyone quite Sturridge-y maybe a bit.
Yeah, it was a bit. For somebody who is, we sort of often say he needs to just play on instinct, and when you give him time to think, he struggles. For somebody who is very much that, he looked like he made his mind up last Friday what type of finish he was going to do there. Because, as you say, he had about 6 or 7 much easier options. Slot to either side of him, go round him maybe. If you get a touch, you win the penalty. The layoff for Jota. So to pick the one he did is utterly insane. Like, I still can't get my head down.
And the keeper isn't in a body position where you think that's an easy chip.
He never went down.
No, he stood up.
He made it hard. He stood quite tall. He was
sometimes
like
you see those like chips and they just hit the chest.
Yeah.
Because he's just done like, he's expecting the keeper to dive. No, none of that. I am putting it 6 feet in the air and you can't get it. It's ridiculous.
So we were asked the question.
Jürgen did not think he was scoring that, by the way. Did you see Jürgen? No. He was... No way did he think. That's what I was like, to be honest.
Protege, do ask us a question here. One of our members on YouTube says, did you all see Michael Owen's tweet? Is he wrong? I hadn't seen Michael Owen's tweet because ultimately...
I saw it, yeah.
He said, wow, that's a lot of words. That finish from Darwin...
He used all of the words he knows.
He did, really, didn't he? That finish from Darwin Nunes yesterday was insane. I can't stop watching it and I can't begin to explain how difficult a skill that is. Moving at pace, the ball running away from you, being inside the box with no room for error. Incredible. But it is also further proof that he was to get closer to becoming a great player many people think he can be. He has to adapt his way of thinking. I mean, to even consider that finish is madness. It's a 1 in 10 2 in 10 finish at best. Learning to slot Dinko go around the goalkeeper is far more productive way to score and will increase his chances to 4 or 5 in 10, thus massively increasing his end return. I'm really not trying to rain on his parade as that goal was pure class, but I'd rather see it when Liverpool are 3-0 up, not at 0-0.
Owen is right. For him, going around the keeper is a 5 in 10, but for Darwin... is it?
Can I?
He defies convention, so
yeah. As a man,
I think Darwin just going for the shot. There's a 2 in 10.
As a man who is better at overhead kicks than I am at one-on-one finishes, I cannot get behind Michael Owen's statement in the slightest. I'm all four players just doing pulling random, exciting, mad shit out their arses sometimes. Let Diogo Jota be the one who, or Salah be the one who scores all the boring finishes.
Conventional goals. Yeah,
conventional goals. Yeah. Chloe, you were in the ground. How did it feel?
It was unbelievable because, like you mentioned there, I think everyone in that stadium when he went one-on-one thought, it's going right down the keeper's throat and we've missed a massive chance. And instead, the entire stadium held its breath. There was a little way when the Brentford fans near our end thought that he dinked it completely over the bar. Oh,
glorious.
And they were instantly drowned out by the sheer what the hell is just like our away end went mad. And it wasn't because it was 1-0, it was because how dare he have the audacity. This lad who misses simple chances has just turned round and this keeper hasn't sat down and he's just chipped him from a yard away. If you would have gave me 100, if you would have said on Friday, Darwin Nunes is going to go through here one-on-one with the goalkeeper just inside the area, what type of finish does he pull off? You could give me 100 guesses and I'd never have guessed that because that was simply outrageous. And yeah, our away end was stunned. We could not believe that he'd pulled that out of his bag. And it was instant that everyone was like, that's a bit of genius because we hadn't even fully celebrated. It was like 3 seconds into the celebration and we were already singing his name. And it's like, usually you go mad, you let it die down, you sing his name as he's walking back. But no, he was at the corner flag and his name was being rung around. And yeah, it was a boss away day, boss away end. But that Darwin Nunes finish, it's the best chip I have ever seen in the flesh. And that's just it. I don't think I'll see any better. It's just the man who's doing it as well contributes to that because he does miss simple finishes. But if he can start just doing that, like just have the composure there that he's had, because that composure, it's outrageous composure. Like Michael Owen, it might be stupid, but also the composure's on a fully different level. His confidence is on a fully different level there. And if that can tell him you can score all these different one-on-ones now, then that's exactly what I need because it was superb.
I get it. And I get it from Michael Owen because Michael Owen was a guy who clearly lived for goals. And Michael Owen is not the kind of guy who would ever square it. He was like, you know, like just like, I don't know, the spoiled kid who's never had to share his toys, that kind of situation. But Darwin, there's just something about him. Like if you're not going to be good at all, like the bits and pieces, then why not?
He's just having fun. Yeah. He's just living his life and he's just having fun, isn't he? The only way that goal could be better. No, there's no way that goal could be better.
Genuinely,
there's no way.
If you saw it from the angle of the away end, the height on the chip is silly. Like, I don't think it looks that high from any other end or any other side of the stadium. But when you look at it from us, we were the opposite end in the corner, right behind it. And the height of it, at the moment, you did think, oh my God, has that just gone over the bar? But as soon as you see the net rustle, you instantly knew. And yeah, it was outrageous.
It's got to go up because he's so close to the goal. He's on the edge of the 18 yards.
But when it goes up, it doesn't normally go 18 yards.
Yeah.
It goes 9.
Yeah.
It's going up and down, but he's got it perfect. In fact, I've thought of it. The only way that goes better for me is if Jota goes and steals her on the line. I would love that.
It flies in the face of obviously what we believe as well about is obviously his instinctive finishing notion. But also, like, we often have questioned his self-belief and his confidence a little bit. Yeah. But that's a finish of a man who's absolutely brimming with confidence right now. Because if that doesn't go in, for example, like, that's a big old risk at nil-nil. That's what kind of the point Michael Owen's making as well. But he clearly feels confident enough in himself and his ability and his worth in the side to be able to even try and execute that. So that's testament to that. But I've got to say as well, Darwin is really good for half an hour. Like, yeah. really good throughout the game, to be honest with you. But obviously, until he went off at half time. But I thought he had a really good half an hour because he'd get that one across the face of the box as well, which anyone could have got on the end of. Diaz was close. Tried a little reverse ball for Diaz as well. So he was enjoying a really good game before the goal.
And let's be honest, Michael Owen is the kind of guy who thinks that adding garlic to bread, nice as it is like some sort of exceptional. You know, cuisine.
He's just
like,
fucking Steve Davis to Ronnie O'Sullivan.
Yes.
That's what it comes down to, or Stephen Hendry, isn't it? You know what I mean? Just wants to win and he's going to do the boring stuff and he's going to snook here and all this type of stuff. Ronnie's going to take the piss as he does it. He'll play left-handed, right-handed and just, he won't win as many. But
let's not forget, Michael Owen is the young man who smashed the ball past the 13-year-old goalkeeper and celebrated. So, like
that is
shocked.
An elite.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But therein lies the difference in, well in mentality.
Is he,
like,
the,
yeah,
well is he also the one who decided to throw a piece of paper in the bin or something and act like he was an apple in the bin? And
His mum told him not to?
Yeah.
But he was like, no, I'm going to carry on. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
That living life dangerously, people.
Different mentality. Again, it's... tall glass of water and a side of bread for dipping, isn't it, compared to like just like, you know, naga chilies naked in a field with loads of like fucking mad hallucinogenics. That's Darwin Nunes. And what the other one's Michael
Owen. Good weekend as well.
Yeah, fucking hell.
I mean, your ass will be in tatters.
Oh yeah.
But my god, what a ride. Missionary Michael there wouldn't be having any of that, like.
His ass would be fine.
Edward Joseph sent in a super chat, says LFC fans, why Darwin, why? Darwin, why not? Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly that. And I agree with, I've seen some of the responses. It's like, if he misses it, then you'd be fuming. Yeah, but he doesn't. And also, you're right, but also, he misses the one, all kinds of fucking dead easy ones.
If
so
he
like,
tried to slot it bottom bins, he'd have missed it. And I think that, like, that is why I can get on board with it, because I've seen him. I saw him do it last game. He took an incredible touch, the ball over the top to him. His first touch is absolutely ludicrous. And then all he has to do is slot it bottom bins past the keeper. And instead, he hits it straight down the keeper's throat. Yeah. And it's like, he scores an unbelievable header, and yet the simple chance that's right in front of him, he misses. So, and also, I think you need to understand the amount of confidence him doing that is going to give him. Like, him scoring a goal that he's just slotted away, yeah, sure, it's boss, but that is simply outrageous. I think that was the only word I had. Odd End was stunned at the fact that, like, we just stood there for the next 5 minutes until Jota got injured and started laughing.
I said it in my post-match video. I was literally sat on my own at home watching it on the telly, and I just started fucking riotously laughing because I'd gone in that short moment. I went from, oh, like, Diogo, that, what incredible headed through ball, to like, it's Darwin going one on one, to does he slot it, does he square it, and then he does neither. He chips the keeper in the most impossible fashion and it goes in, and you're just like, I honestly wouldn't swap it. I would like him to score more goals, but ultimately there's probably going to come a point, and it's still early, and he can obviously continue to improve, and he has done just in his time at Liverpool. But he might always have a bit of this to him. But I would rather him be like, have this level of goal return, but give us like loads of fucking mad moments, than have a same level of goal return, but they're all boring. You know, because there's loads of strikers that do that. But it's football should be about feelings, and Darwin Nunes gives me lots of feelings. Solo, P1 with the super chat says, what a touch of class from Nunes. Not even sure it was a touch of class, it was just a touch of absolute fucking raven lunacy, wasn't it? And who doesn't need a bit of that in their lives? Was that the best chip you've ever seen?
Yes.
Let us know in the comments section underneath.
Sturridge did. Was it West Brom where he scores that outrageous chip from outside the area?
Yeah, he scores one against Everton as well. But no, yeah, he does score
one,
good.
Like, the
celebration against
head.
Everton's the one. Like, yeah, stands there, just like, stands that's there. That boss.
Yeah. Okay, Mo Salah back, Chris. I don't know how where your psychology went with this one, but I went from, he's on the bench, fine. Watching how our attackers were playing, I was like, oh my god, we. Don't need Mo Salah anymore. And I went through a narrative in my head of like, get on the phone to the PIF clubs right now. They've never been in a better position to accept an offer for Mohamed Salah. Then Jota gets injured. Then he comes on.
And he's amazing.
Well, he fluffs a couple of chances.
He could have had a hat trick.
He was brilliant. He was absolutely superb. Obviously, the one where he's running through on goal, I think he's trying to chip the keeper with the outside of his boot and he just gets it all wrong, which is mad. But he just looked rested. He looked fitter than we've seen. You know, obviously it was New Year's Day, wasn't it? His last game for us, maybe. Something like that. And he just looked so fast and ready for it. And yeah, goal and assist in 60 minutes or something like that. Like, he'd never almost been away, like he'd not been injured, but he just looked fit and fresh, and he looked like he was chomping at the bit to get into this side and play in with the team the way that it's playing at the moment. And that is a very, very dangerous Mo Salah.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Chloe, he's just, yeah, it's easy. I mean, inevitable. It's not easy to forget what Mo does because he's been doing
inevitable
it for ages. Yeah. He's Thanos-esque. He was just great. He was just absolutely great. And, you know, and there's almost a little bit of a, if Jota's out, and there's obviously the rumours are, we'll do a bit more on that in part two, but, you know, it's a good time for him to come back in and be just as good as he was when he left, really.
Yeah, it was, like you've mentioned, we all know, we've been seeing from his Instagram how much he's been working to get back on the pitch. And I don't think Liverpool wanted to bring him on that early. That's quite obvious. They would have liked him to maybe have 30 minutes towards the end. But he comes on and straight away he's in the action. You know, he misses a couple of one-on-ones, but he's on the off shoulder so many times, and he's just causing absolute chaos because he's so good. And then there was one on the sideline where he just sells the defender twice, and it's like, oh, he absolutely has
a lot. About that
and
one.
On the way ends, just like, oh my god, like he just, oh, I'm gonna, oh no, I'm not, I'm actually gonna go down here, see you later, lad. And his finish,
he waited for the lad to rip him, he waited for him so he could go round him.
He was like, come back again, lads, I'll do it again, please. Nice one. But his finish is unbelievable. Bear in mind, he'd missed two really, really good chances. And this one is a flick on from Gakpo, and he's just chasing the ball because he smells danger. He's got the pace. But Mo Salah is 5 foot something, and the muscle to have off a Brentford defender is incredible. There was at one point where I thought, nah, that the Brentford defender's gonna get a foot in here, and he's gonna deal with that. And the strength of Mo Salah is just ridiculous. Falling down, finds the bottom corner, and his celebration was right in front of me, and you could tell he was happy to be back. He was screaming, he was giving it loads. And then his name got absolutely rung around the stadium, and you could just tell, yeah, this is, I'm happy to be back. I'm about to put Liverpool on my back, and I'm about to get us over the line. And yeah, he was superb. Could have, probably should have had a hat-trick. But in the end, one goal was all he needed and one assist. And his ball to Maka was incredible as well.
Yeah, that was it. It was like a little snapshot of everything that Salah is, really, isn't it, Dan? Yeah. You know, again, the assist actually, as much as anything else, because you expect it. The goal was such a Mo Salah goal. It was a little bit. It was a little bit of pace, which was great to see.
Yeah.
It was, let's be honest, a very, very untidy set of touches that got him into that sort of situation.
He bundles it.
He does.
That's what Mo does, though.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's an archetypal.
It's Mo at his best.
It's an archetypal Mo Salah situation. But actually the assist, that, you know, not to be as exaggerated as Chris Pajak in my...
What's exaggerated? If anything, I was underselling it. I don't think I did it justice, to be honest.
The pass to Matt McAllister is just genius.
Yeah, it was, yeah. It was best thing we've ever seen.
It is better than his goal.
It was sharp, Mo Salah. He was really, really sharp. And as Chloe kind of alluded to today, he was hungry as well, which is a very, very dangerous proposition for our rivals, because him at his best, looking as good as that, it means we can carry on sort of on the path that we're on now, which is massively important given what happened in the injury front. But yeah, it was a bit of a best bit, really, of the modern day Mo, because it had all the dribbling that we've alluded to. It had the goal to boot. It had that panic, that sheer panic that seemed to set in when defenders even sense that he's in the vicinity, because that goal there was very reminiscent of a few goals he scored for us now, whereby he really doesn't have any right to get to that ball first, but because he's somewhere thereabout, defenders just shit themselves and they just freeze, essentially. And Salah's the one who never takes a backward step. He's just on it straight away. He senses the opportunity and takes it with aplomb. So yeah, amazing to have him back. Yeah, and obviously that definitely earlier than was pre-planned, I would imagine. But just getting him back up and running is so, so important for the weeks to come, because listen, we often forget or take for granted essentially what Mo Salah does, because we obviously wax lyrical about Darwin Nunes and what Luis Diaz have been doing, Diogo Jota more recently, of course. But Mo Salah continues to produce every single time he steps on a 40 pitch for Liverpool.
Yeah, he's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. I agree with that. He's got that weird nature about him where I think that he'll always draw. There's always going to be people who think Eden Hazard was a better footballer than Salah
that
forever.
Incorrect.
Well, I know, genuinely, like, because there is a silkiness to certain footballers, I think, that just catches the eye and it leaves you with it. But he's a machine. Mm-hmm. He's an absolute machine. I'm going to get it up because I think I'm right. You might know automatically. He's now a goal behind Haaland in the Golden Boot race, right? And I think he's second top for assists in the Premier League as well. I'm just going to double check that.
He's 24, was it?
The weekend
they went two for both.
I don't know.
Mad. It was in 30. He's scored an assist in 30 Premier League games, and the names above him were like Wayne Rooney, Thierry Henry. I forgot who else it was, but they have all done it in like 50 more games, and there's only two more times he has to do that to get to Wayne Rooney. So it's just silly.
There we go. Yeah, Erling Haaland top of the pile, 16 Premier League goals. Salah second on 15, and then top of the assist charts, Kieran Trippier and Ollie Watkins on 10, and then you got Pascal Gross, Pedro Neto, and Mohamed Salah on 9. And that's bearing in mind that he's just missed 6 weeks of football as well. Now, obviously, there wasn't loads of Premier League games in that as much as there could have been. But regardless, he's just come in and gone, yep, sounds up and running, and it's mad. I just thought it was wonderful for him, Chris, that we're going to talk on Bias Football Pod this week about Man City, of course we are, and particularly Erling Haaland. But it was nice to see the sort of contrast between the two of them by the end of the weekend, where you've got Salah coming back in, a little underbaked, you'd imagine. You know, clearly didn't want to play him for that much football. But he's come in, got himself back up and running, and then you've got Erling Haaland, who just looked rageful in how badly his afternoon had gone. I don't think any of us dreamt at the start of the season that Salah would get anywhere near the top goal scorer after what happened last year. But I mean, look, he's flying.
He'll fight for that regardless, won't he? Mm-hmm. Obviously, I think he knows that there's a more important thing that you've got to fight for, and that's the other thing that I love about Mo, is I think he does put the team before those
he's
individual
right
honours
party.
Now. Yes, of course. Thank you, Travis Kelce.
I was going to say fight for his love, but that's...
Oh, I'm glad you didn't.
You chose well.
Anyway...
Should I carry on?
Because with heaven, bad for.
Like, he will want the Premier League more than the individual honours, but if he's got a sniff of both, he'll go for both of them, and that's the thing, isn't it? But he might want all three. That's the other thing, and it's well within his wheelhouse to be able to get all three at the moment, isn't it? But as you say, he just comes back in, he just looks fucking brilliant. It looks like he wants it. It looks like I really do think he'd watched that over the last few weeks and thought, I can't wait to get back into this side. They're firing now. I'm gonna get a hat full of goals when I come back in here and stuff. And yeah, I don't know what his ceiling is this season, but it's probably higher than I thought at the start of the season.
The other thing is, you know, a couple of weeks ago when Kevin De Bruyne was announced back and Erling Haaland was announced back for City, I just felt like, oh, for God's sake, like, we just lost Mo in the same week that Erling Haaland was announced that he was back firing.
Were they announced back by that really cringe-worthy guy in the booth? Was that...
Good God.
Welcome back!
Oh, hate it.
Your dibbers and your dobbers and your dabbers, it's Erling Haaland.
Have you seen their announcement for when they're getting off the coach?
Yeah,
it is the worst thing I've ever seen. But
that
either
guy,
way,
rumour has it, sells fucking meat on car parks by Quicksaves.
Don't forget your black bin bags. On offer till November.
I'll do you 3 for 10.
Anyway, when Kevin De Bruyne came back and hit the ground running, you're thinking, for God's sake. But Mo Salah, if he can come back and do that, then that's perfectly sound with all of us.
Yeah, Edward Joseph, another super chat, says Mo Salah is on the hunt for golden boot and ball. Goals win matches, assists win trophies. I like that. I don't think I've ever heard anyone say that, but that's a thing from now on. Defences as well will be in there somewhere. But
I have something to say about that.
Just on randomly on the side for that, what I really like of late, I thoroughly enjoyed Virgil van Dijk being Liverpool's captain.
So
the way he's conducting himself, because obviously we had that thing post Klopp's announcement where like a couple of quotes were taken a little bit out of context in like a mix zone after the game, and then he went on Men in Blazers, didn't he, and basically put it straight. And ever since then, And look, I mean, the ultra cynic would say, you kind of, are you trying to portray a certain thing or whatever? But he just looks genuinely made up to be Liverpool captain. He references it a lot. He's just so, he's his normal, cool and confident self. But I've seen Van Dijk in certain sort of media situations before. He's always been a good talker, but he's never not necessarily the guy who wants to throw himself forward into the limelight. But just, you know, that sense of confidence you get from someone who just feels like they've got all the answers at all times. Yeah, just absolutely loved watching that.
I love the fact that he slaps people on the head after they've scored as well. gives them a little...
Wisps his head.
I like that.
Gavin Birch, Chris, and moreover, what it did to how Liverpool played. I thought it was interesting that it felt like we started the game very old school Liverpool, with the two fullbacks being two fullbacks. Curtis kind of started similar to we saw him in the Arsenal game, where they dropped him a little deeper to kind of help out or whatever. But I don't know whether it was directly linked to Gavin Birch or what. But you definitely saw Bradley and Burton a lot more as the game wore on. Is that a Gavin Birch doing thing, do you think?
Or was I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't know, but like you, it's hard not to notice Conor Bradley running through the middle of the pitch more often when Gavin Birch is on there. I think, you know, I thought Gavin Birch played really well. I thought, you know, he, for the McAllister goal, was it? He was absolutely superb, turning his man and feeding Mo, and obviously it goes to McAllister who scores and stuff. But I just felt like, I don't know whether this is right, but sometimes your man management of a player is important, isn't it? And I think the way he sort of got into the side and then sort of was moved away a little bit last couple of weeks, he sees the injuries and he thinks, I've got to take my opportunity because he's bringing me on ahead of Harvey Elliott here. Mm-hmm. I've got to stay ahead of Harvey Elliott here. And I think it's just a player and a man who is grasping an opportunity. And I don't know whether tactically it was anything to do with him. And I've not watched the game back to be able to look into it and give more insight, unfortunately. So
yeah, I'm always a little... I don't know, I watch Gavin Birch probably more lately, Dan, because I did say a few weeks ago I was a little concerned with his sort of his development a bit. I felt like him and Szoboszlai had both stalled a touch, and then Szoboszlai has had so many injury problems since then. I basically scored a couple of important goals for us, which kind of eases that certainly. But Gavin Birch feels a bit like he's not perfectly suited to any of the roles at the moment for us. Mm-hmm. But every time I watch him, I can see what a good player is. I don't think I've ever seen him play for us and not seen a moment or two and gone, ooh, and like paired over something that he's done. And Chris is right to reference his role in the McAllister goal. He's the one who gets the ball to Salah, does brilliantly for it. But yeah, this is the thing. This is why you buy four players in the summer, because if you buy one and one gets injured, then everything you're trying to do comes completely unravelled. It's his time now, and it's going to have to be his time. And there's certainly enough there to say that he's ready to take it, but he does need to, in the next week or two, he's really going to have to up his game, I think.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, but I was made up of how he performed at the weekend, because I think he has petered off a little bit in recent weeks and people have started to really sort of question what he's all about. I think they're fair sort of questions to have as well, because he doesn't sort of fit the mould of your archetypal Jurgen Klopp midfielder, because he is so attack-minded. Like, his first thought is always, how can I affect the game moving forwards? Which is nice, and it's a bit of a luxury to have, but when that comes at the detriment of the defensive work, then you have to sort of raise questions about what he's actually bringing to the party. But I thought it was exceptional the weekend, and it was really nice to see his involvement in that goal, because that is the best of any midfielder, really, not just Ryan Gravenberg, because he wins his battle and then gets us moving forwards and a goal stems from it. So absolutely brilliant news. But I like Ryan Gravenberg, I really do. I think he has a very high ceiling. I think in terms of assets, I think he's got the lot, to be honest with you. He's got the physicality, he's quick enough, he's strong enough, he's brilliant on the ball, he carries it so well, he turns exceptionally. And I think how wide Brentford were helped him play his game, because they felt like once he turned the man, which he does pretty much at will, the space just opened up for him then, and he was allowed to carry the ball forward and get us moving. So really, really impressed with him. A massive couple of weeks for him. And I was pleased in not just his performance, but it felt like he'd sensed that opportunity because of the Curtis Jones injury. And he's someone who spoke openly about wanting to play more footy. He was really disappointed with his time at Bayern Munich. So therefore, when you get the chance, take it. He's probably had a couple of chances already in Liverpool shirt, and he's never really nailed down the spot. Mm-hmm. So he might have had a look at himself over the last couple of weeks and gone, next chance I get, just watch what I do. And it certainly felt like that, because That was a performance of a man who isn't happy playing a bit part role. And that's what you want, ultimately. You don't want loads of bit part players you can drop in every now and then. Yeah. You want lads who are just desperate to play all the time.
Totally agree on that. It's a couple of players just to cover before we head to the break. Chloe, first one is Conor Bradley. Just wow. I mean, like, he obviously comes in a couple of weeks ago. He's absolutely amazing. We're all raving about him as a footballer. Then obviously suffers that absolute, you know, horrendous thing with his dad. And now he's back, and he's just back in the team. And yeah, he just looks at every inch a first team Liverpool player. And actually beyond that, he looks like a very good first team Liverpool player. But that's all, just to get to that stage is, it shouldn't be underestimated how difficult that is to do, because lots have tried and failed under Jurgen Klopp. But he does. He looks a perfect fit for us.
Yeah, he looks brilliant. And the only way I can, you know, give him any justice to the role he's doing is that if a ball goes to him under pressure, I've got absolutely no worries at all. There was times in that game where we passed out to the right hand side and he's getting pressed instantly by Morpay or whoever it is, and he just manages to get that yard of space and slot it down instead of just hoofing it long and saying Darwin Nunez chase that. He found Diogo Jota in the little pockets, and yeah, I thought he was wonderful. His almost goal is silly. The way he's just flicked that with the amount of pressure, the give and go in finding space, his first touch, and then to flick it with the outside of his foot and get it on target, and the keeper makes a really, really good save for that. But yeah, it's just everything about him. Defensively, he looks solid. If you beat him the first time, he's got the tenacity to go back and win the ball off you, and he learns from it. If you get past him once, he learns whether to give you those couple of yards extra and stand up to the challenge the next time round. And yeah, I thought he was superb, both, you know, defensively and going forward. And it's boss to see, because Trent is such a massive, massive miss. But with Conor Bradley, the last couple of weeks where he's not been available, which obviously you can totally understand that, it's always been, I've thought, we've missed Conor Bradley here. Like, wow, we've missed Conor Bradley, like this young kid. And now he's back, and I really, really, really miss Trent, but I don't miss him in the sense of, I miss him going attacking and you know, finding the pockets of space and just the passes that he can do that no one else on the football pitch can do.
You know what it is?
But it's the overall game.
But it's like how we haven't missed Mo Salah for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
But when you put Mo Salah in, you realise that there's an effortless goal and assist out of nowhere. And that's what Trent will be like when he comes back into the scene when he's fully fit again. But what it is, over the years, we've had like understudies to players and they've just not been at the required level, or you're forcing someone into a situation. Bradley is just, he's not Trent because no one's Trent. Mm-hmm. But what he is he's a really good all-rounder there. He's got pace. You mentioned the tenacity. He's good defensively. He's really good carrying the ball forward. He's got the lot. So he's not like a 6'4" centre-half that we're saying go and do a job out there. And he's not like a lightweight, underproven kid who's just not ready for the physicality of it. He is, like, Arsenal don't have Trent, but they play Ben White there, and Ben White is not the best right back on earth, but he's very good at doing all the bits and pieces that are required of it. And I'm not saying even Conor Bradley is yet as good as someone like Ben White, but I could see how he could just be that. You know, we actually just need him to be a good right back, and he's been a really good right back.
From what he's done in a short space of time, I think he's incredible for a start. And I won't start talking about what the future could hold and you know, the few amount of games that he's had. What I will what I will say is Tsimikas has done brilliantly this season, but he's just not as good as Robbo.
Yeah.
Conor Bradley has elements to his game that are better than Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Okay.
I don't think Tsimikas does when you compare him to Andy Robertson. I think you might say corners, but we don't need him to take the corners because we've got other lads who can take corners just as well as him. Mm-hmm. But we've got something extra which we didn't have by playing Conor Bradley, and that is this full throttle attacking fullback that we just don't have in our squad. It's just another Andy Robertson, basically.
Yeah,
that's all he is, isn't it? You know what I mean? And so he is better than Trent at some things, and he is younger, and he is playing with a fearlessness and a freedom that nobody else in the side is playing with at the moment, and a belief that he can continue to do it. So I'm not scared of saying I'm happy when Conor Bradley's playing at the moment, because I am, because he's proven it each and every week that what he's doing is brilliant. He looked like Diogo Jota with that one.
Yeah.
When he's running through, and the way he dragged it with his left foot to get it out for the flick with his right, that's Jota. He's looked like a flying fullback down the right-hand side at times. He's looked like Nathaniel Clyne defensively, if you want to pick a decent fullback defensively. He's got elements of loads of people's games, and he puts them all together. Yeah. And I've not been disappointed once with his performance.
I just love watching.
And he clearly loves it, and he understands the system, because he's grown up as a Liverpool player under Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether he was in the first team or not, the entire club is now in his DNA, knows no other way to play football, so he understands it intrinsically.
Yeah, and it was funny, I just rewinding back to those early pre-season games, and remember starting going, oh, we've inverted, we had Trent inverted, what are we going to do for this pre-season game? Oh, Conor Bradley's just going to invert, oh, he's fine. And the thing is, as we say, we saw him play as a more traditional right-back, an Andy Robertson-style right-back for a spell, and then started to invert, and yeah, he's just... What a talent.
In that second half, when he was getting forward, there was loads of us who, at like 3-0, 3-1 up, we were like, he'd found himself in the space to shoot. We were like, go on.
He was basically a 10 at times.
Yeah. Go on, lad. And because of the finish against Chelsea, we were like, yeah, you've got the quality to go and shoot from there. And I think he makes the keeper make a really good save at one point. But yeah, he's been unbelievable.
Yeah. Cody Gakpo, just briefly before we move on, it's 10 for the season. Liverpool first Premier League team to have 4 players in double figures for goals. I mean, Luis Diaz is one behind. You know, there's a chance we could have 5 before we get to the cup final.
He was ridiculously good yesterday, on Saturday as well.
This is one of the things. It's going to be an interesting few weeks for someone like Cody Gakpo, but I think it typified the strength and depth for Liverpool. He can come.
When you were saying before,
really well.
We were talking about Darwin Nunes, and you said like, I'd rather have someone score those types of goals. I was thinking of Gakpo when you said it. So I was thinking, he's not that far behind. Yeah, they're all boring, aren't they? This might be the furthest out he scored one from. It was 8 yards something like, you know what I mean? He just, his position's brilliant. He gets into the right positions and he finishes them. But he's equally adept at finishing left-footed or right-footed. He doesn't come across like a really fun player, but my word, he's effective. Like,
yeah, he's very, very good.
My favourite thing about Gakpo, sorry, in that game was, I think, I don't know what the score was, but either way, they'd counted on us. And he sprinted full throttle back. And it must have been... maybe even 4-1 at this point, but he still sprinted all the way back when there was no left back, when we were out of position, and he stopped the cross, and we went, they got a throw-in from it, but it was one of the biggest cheers from our away end, that the fact that he just had the determination to get back.
Yeah. Great. I suspect we'll be seeing a little bit more of him in the coming weeks.
A lot more of him.
We will be discussing injuries in part 2, so make sure you stay tuned for that. But yeah, we are on the countdown to the League Cup final. Some amazing stuff on Red Men Plus coming. Here's a little look at all of that stuff, and plenty of time as well to sign up in the...
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome. Like, what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome. Like, what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
We are on the way to Wembley for the League Cup final. What better way to get prepared, educate yourself about Liverpool's historic relationship with the League Cup than over on redmenplus.com. The League Cup story, telling the entire history in podcast form of the Reds' illustrious 9 victories.
Liverpool Football Club were the best team in not only in England, but in Europe.
We've had bigger things and better things to celebrate in recent years, but that day, it felt massive.
It wasn't about football, it was about something more.
There is Squad Game, a standalone documentary looking at Liverpool's last win in the League Cup final in that 0-0 and then penalty shootout victory over Chelsea.
Starting Kelleher in goal immediately made the goalkeepers the story of the game.
If there's a trophy and a medal to be celebrated, Liverpool know how to celebrate it.
It's always a big deal to win a trophy.
Another fabulous documentary, The 6-Year Wait, going all the way back to 2001, the treble season, to look at how the Worthington Cup was captured.
A campaign that saw Liverpool play in every match possible, in every tournament they entered, coming away with the League Cup, the FA Cup, the UEFA Cup, and for the first time ever, qualification for the Champions League.
From us winning that first trophy, that absolutely got the lads' belief that they were good enough to compete.
Safe Hands, a featurette about Liverpool's goalkeeper mural that was updated after the 2022 win with a wonderful etching of Quirin Kelleher.
But the boss always said, yeah, we play the number 2 goalie, but most clubs, they change the final and go back to the number 1 goalie, which would be a bit unfair.
And lots more besides that as well. Head over to redmenplus.com for more features, interviews, podcasts and analysis as we head to Wembley to try and bring home League Cup number 10. Yes, get ready for Wembley. Head to redmenplus.com. Sign up. Videos, podcasts, interviews, documentaries, the lot. And of course, that full interview in 2 parts.
Why not? Alonso and then a Carabao Cup final preview as well. And we've got John McKenzie from Tifo. Went down to London last week and did something with him in the build-up to it. That is the nerdiest football chat I've ever had. And I could not have been happier with it.
Amazing.
I'm so proud of it. I mean, I didn't follow a lot of what he was saying, wow, but it was really good.
Never be the smartest man in the
Honestly,
room.
Honestly, I never am.
and also the latest episode of the League Cup story as well, which is a podcast series. I did 5 episodes of 2 years ago in the build to the last League Cup final, where Tony Evans' insight into Liverpool's early League Cup wins in the 80s in particular, just absolutely brilliant stuff. But yeah, we've updated that to include the win from 2 years ago as well. So yeah, get involved with all that. So if you want to know more about how Liverpool went about being the record holder for the amount of League Cups, fill your boots, redmenplus.com. So here we are. Let's do it. The stuff that actually made us less arsed about Liverpool going away to a tricky ground that we never win at and winning for the first time in 80 years or something.
Are we doing the story about the socks and how they're not allowed holes in them now? Or like, no, that's not it's the injuries, isn't it?
And the speed holes, right. Okay. Anyway.
Because that really got my back up.
You're not allowed to have holes in your socks anymore?
I don't know. Okay. I think Richard fucking Keys was talking about it, saying it's a joke.
He's a joke.
Okay, injuries. There's a wonderful Richard Keys, Andy Gray parody in the latest Alan Partridge book, which I highly, highly, highly recommend. Anyway, Alisson, Joel Matip, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Thiago Alcantara, Stefan Bacetic, Dominic Szoboszlai, Curtis Jones, Diogo Jota, Ben Doak and potentially Darwin Nunez.
That is a good side.
I nearly messaged either you or someone like Neil Jones to tell me someone from the academy that's like maybe under 21s who's injured that might
Isn't
be able
Salah
to turn this
as well?
Into a, yeah, well, yeah, but there you go, potentially Salah as well.
You have Tom Hill, centre midfielder, captain's 21 sometime, he's injured.
There you go.
How,
let's put that team out and say, where would this team finish in the Premier League?
Anyone want to
just above United?
I'm miles clear of Everton.
with or without the deduction?
Either way.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, I mean, ultimately...
Actually, I think I've been disrespectful there. That was a strong side to begin with.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a little...
Lost
I mean,
away a little
so
bit.
So it's Alisson in goal, obviously. Matip's the only reckoner, but you could play, like, maybe Matip and...
Jetic started off as a centre-half and he was
well, Thiago played as a centre-back last game.
True, yeah, I mean, I never want to see that again.
3.5 minutes at centre-back.
It's Celta Vigo who's a centre-back. Yeah. That works.
Matip Bacetic, it's probably a still.
Reece Williams is also injured right now, by the way, everyone.
It's not. Okay. He's not on loan.
No, he came back because of his injury.
Okay.
So we own him and he's injured.
Okay, sound. So, Matip...
All right, Bacetic right back, Trent left.
Trent left back.
Yes, now we're talking.
Which I'd be interested to see. Thiago, Szoboszlai, yeah. Jones as a midfield three.
You mean we haven't got a proper DM injured? Thiago? Did you say Thiago?
Yeah. Jota, Doak, Nunes.
Yeah. I reckon that side could be United's. Probably 6-0.
I'm not being funny, but that side might be better than the side that we played at we started at the weekend on paper. You know, I'd be interested to know if you compared, like, let's just say arbitrary that doesn't really reflect anything, like their footy manager stats or what their fixed, non-updated stats are from FIFA at the start of the season. Sorry. Yeah, I've seen. It would be, I think that would be bloody close between the side that we started and the side, because like Trent will be so much more higher rated than like Conor Bradley as an example in there. Obviously we've got Virgil still, interesting though. I mean, yikes is ultimately what I wanted to point out with this, Chris. I know you did a bit of injury chat last week, but it does feel like we could do with a little bit of luck, and it's mad that I think the Chelsea game, it felt like we were having the conversations like, this feels unfair now, we've just battered Chelsea and all the good lads are coming back. Yeah. And yeah, no they're not.
No, and then at the weekend obviously you look at the bench and you're thinking, oh, that's the strongest bench we've had for absolutely ages, look at the difference makers we've got here. Literally half an hour later, fucking hell, the squad's fucked and we're going to finish 7th because of it, because that's the way that it is as a football fan, isn't it? And like that, the Jones. I think the Jones injury and is, you know, they're on a par, Jones and Jota, for me. The two of them have been so good. It really does hurt our title chances. I really do think it does, and it's a killer blow, that, isn't it? To think, and it's not for all the things like a couple of years ago where you go, right, listen, I think Jürgen got it wrong without getting centre backs and all this type of stuff. This is an area of the pitch where we thought we were stocked.
Yeah,
like it's not the area. Centre back's the big problem I've had all season long. If you go back to the transfer windows and stuff, did we get enough? We've actually just about had enough. This is your fucking eights and your blooming forwards, which we were stocked in.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that annoys me, is that you can't foresee this happening.
I don't think, Chloe, it necessarily stops us winning the title, but I wonder if all of a sudden being involved deeply in four competitions. Now, look, after Sunday it'll be three competitions and that'll be a thing, but we had the squad capable of challenging on multiple fronts, but we're not far removed from a situation that we were in when we went for the quadruple last time, where all of a sudden you're asking a smaller bunch of lads to go again week in, week in, and that's the biggest probably concern about that, is we're looking at Luton in midweek, which, if you want to win the Premier League, you need to go and get 3 points at Anfield there. But also, it's Klopp's farewell tour. You've got a piece of silverware to win. That might be the only piece of silverware we win this season, because, you know, shit can happen. And that's the major problem there, is that we're all of a sudden, some decisions are going to have to be taken that either put weaker sides out, or we're going to ask lads to go into the red zone.
Yeah, and the problem is with asking those small group of lads to go again and again and again, is if they pick up another injury, you're going to have the situation where, you know, against Arsenal, where Conor Bradley was 100% supposed to start that game and can't, for reasons which you can totally understand. But then we've had to put Trent in when he is not ready. And now it's got another setback for Trent, because you've had to push him and start him too soon. And you don't want that cycle to happen again. You don't want to push Ryan Gravenberch, who hasn't played loads and loads of football, And, you know, the other day he was ruled out in the warm-up because he picked up a little niggle and that. You don't want to tell him to go to the well too many times, and then by the time you've asked him to go again, you're another man short. And Sabo's only just coming back, and you've got to throw him back into the firing line, and he might not be ready for that. You know, we've saw it with Mo, which hopefully, you know, that is just a little bit of cramp, but there is still rumours around him potentially picking up a little injury from us having to put him on, you know, 40 minutes from where we actually really wanted to put him on. So yeah, at 1-0, like at half time, our away end was devastated, because even though I thought we'd been brilliant and look, we had to ride a little bit of a storm, that Jota injury and the Curtis Jones injury, our away end was just done in. Like, we were just like, what the hell can we do here? And that's why, you know, running away with it 4-1, it put me in much a better mood. And I just, City dropped points and I didn't react to it. Like, I fully, if that was me any other day, I'd be absolutely bouncing off the walls. But I wasn't, because I thought to myself, they've dropped points, but we've lost, we've got about 8 of our senior first team lads out. Like, it seems impossible. And yeah, look, it's a situation that we're going to have to dig deep in. And we hope we've got the mentality, because we've shown that we can face adversity and really come through it this season. That's something we have shown, and we'll have to really buy into that. And what I'm glad is that with the Southampton game, it gives you an extra week to bring those players back. And look, at this point, if Southampton is a game where I need to rest absolutely every single one of our players, then that's just going to have to be done, because it's much more important that we try and win a Premier League title than get past Southampton in the FA Cup.
It is just one of these things, isn't it? It's often not the how you get on in the moment, Dan. We saw this with the post-title winning season, COVID season, whatever, where, you know, people forget we were top of Christmas, but it was ultimately we asked the lads that we had left to go so much that, okay, yes, ultimately losing Joe Matta for the rest of the season was probably the final sort of straw, but it was just that everyone else was done in by that point. And then, as Chloe mentioned, you're asking the lads who've been out the cold, they've then got to come back in ready when they're extra susceptible to injuries. We've seen that with Thiago as the prime example of it, really. What, Trent's another one. Salah, if Salah's not available for midweek, that'll be another example of it. We have to be careful to sort of massage the squad through this, really.
Yeah, it's made a very difficult challenge, you know, all the more difficult, if not nigh on impossible, to be honest with you, because we all know how closely Jurgen Klopp's going to work with his team and his staff in the round, and to make sure we can extract the very best out of what's available. But now what's available is dwindling by the day, it feels like, because we are very much the walking wounded, and we're going to be patched up a little bit, it feels like, for this game in midweek and potentially the final as well. To put a bit more of a positive spin, like, I agree with everything everyone said, and it is getting to the point whereby you're sailing a little bit closer to win now with how many key players can you afford to lose, yes. I would say. But to put a slightly more positive outlook on this whole thing, like, we've just spent a bit of time speaking how good Conor Bradley's been. Joel Quant's a likewise, I've had conversations. You know, you've got James McCollin there, Bobby Clark a little bit as well. So some of these games we've got coming up, Luton probably falls into this category, Southampton likewise. They are games whereby you can afford to integrate some of these younger lads, these academy lads. We've shown we need to sort of trust them and just back them to do a job, and they've done it really well so far. So I imagine we'll be leaning on them a little bit more over the next few weeks just to get by. And the fixture list in the Premier League isn't a cruel mistress right now. Up until you get to the City game, we might have a couple back by then. So trying to be ultra positive in what is an absolute shit show of a situation.
And this is the thing, you know, look, we've lived experience of this, so this could be a thing that turns on its head. I think Klopp needs to be very careful not to talk about curses anymore, because I think stupid stuff like that gets in people's heads. I do think players as well, because they're all very superstitious sort of people. Shit just happens and you crack on with it. But I agree, I think we're fortunate that we have been able to blood in so many younger players, which would mean we've got more of a talent pool to call upon than we have done before. And also, this is going to be famous last words in some regards, because we've still got to play Luton yet, but I'd rather have Luton at home in this game, and I'm glad that it's Southampton in the FA Cup that follows, because I think you can engineer one-off wins. I think you could put a mad team out, Chris, in midweek here that you wouldn't be picking if you were, you know, in any other set of circumstances, but particularly because it's the cup final at the weekend. I think you could pull a mad one where Kay Gordon starts in an attack, and, you know, you could have McConnell in midfield, and you can have Quanson in there, and you could keep Bradley in there, and that kind of stuff. And even if it's 60 minutes and then you bring in the cavalry on of some of your senior players or whatever, that's all right for one game. If we end up in a situation where it's McConnell and Quansah and Kate Gordon playing five games back to back, that's where we're going to be fucked.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jürgen, after a week's break before the last game, I think he's looking at the final and going, get me there with the lads that we've got available and fit at the moment. So I imagine it's going to be a really strong side against Luton. But take your point, obviously, you know, the Southampton games where you maybe want to make the changes and stuff like that.
But sorry, more on like the sex Salah as an example, because if he's a bit, if he's got a cramp and they're having to be careful with them, he's one that they will, they're not going to, given the current injuries they've got, if anyone's borderline, they probably won't risk them for this game.
Given no, and that's final. Where, like, for me, it'll be, you know, Elliot playing on that right-hand side instead, maybe with Gakpo and Diaz or something like that up top. I still think he picks from the same 14, 15 players for me from his first 11. Yeah. And then I think once the final's done it, how do we get to the international break in March? Like, how are we going to get there? And what are we going to look like when we come out of the back? And just sort of segment it a little bit and, like, you know, a few games or a few weeks ahead, how are we getting here? How are we going to navigate this path and stuff like that? Because I think the biggest problem I think Liverpool have got, and this is getting a little bit down on it, is that we've changed games. That's what Klopp's done this season with the substitute bench. Yeah. And for all, like, Algon McConnell and Clark and everything else has been, it's just not the same as when you're bringing on lads who are game changers. And that's what I think we're losing, and that's what set us apart. Yeah. It's why we're top of the league at the moment.
It's why we scored more goals in the final 15-minute games than any other period during a football match. Yeah.
And nearly all the others combined.
So it's certainly double the other big ones. It's an interesting thought, though, for this thought experience, nothing else, Dan. I do wonder whether, because I think that's solid what Chris is saying there, but I agree on that notion of, and I think we've done this a couple of times, of whether this is just because of the exceptional circumstances of this, where maybe you do start a bit weaker. You've got Anfield behind you, everyone can get bought into it, and maybe you just keep one or two in reserve, because that's the problem. The problem there is if you're bringing on Bobby Clark and James McConnell as your game-changing substitutions, then they're not changing games, or they're less likely to change games. Whereas if you can engineer Harvey Elliott or Gakpo or both.
But then how do you keep Elliott happy when he's not started the game that he definitely should have started? Because he's being held back. I mean, it's so difficult in terms of what Jürgen's job is to manage the squad in that regard, isn't it?
It's really hard, but as I say, I don't think any of these youngsters that we talk about have let us down, whether it be starting or from the bench. So I don't see, I think he's going to have to just bend and flex a little bit now, more than he ever would have predicted beforehand. But I wouldn't be shocked whatsoever. And it's funny, while you were sort of naming the potential for these, some of the youngsters coming into the starting 11, I was smiling because I said exactly the same thing to Chloe this morning. Where's a world of like Con to start? Obviously, Conor Bradley likes, right? McConnell comes into midfield. Maybe you do get Kay Gordon. Wouldn't be surprised if he'd like to Jaden Dans, Bobby Clark in and around it all of a sudden. Maybe from the bench. Trey and Yoni's been on the bench recently because we're going to need them. Not for long, we all hope. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe for the next couple of weeks to get us this Man City game, we might just need to call on these lads. And wouldn't shock me. Obviously, the Southampton game is the caveat to all of this, because you could just go full wholesale changes for that and say, right, there's basically under-21s. We'll keep a little firepower back on the bench and we might try and change the game that way. But for me, this Luton game presents a really interesting opportunity to just mix things up a little bit. Hold Endo back, hold McAllister back, maybe Harvey Elliott as well, maybe Salah, who knows. But I would not be surprised one bit if we've seen quite an interesting 11 for that game.
It's the one that stands in my mind. Obviously, you've got the Leicester League Cup quarterfinal from 2 years ago, but also Southampton at the end of that season when we go away and we're right in the running. It's after Villarreal. It's right toward the end of the season, and we play Simikas, Konate, Matip, Gomez as the back four, Jones, Milner, Elliott as the midfield three, and Jota, Firmino, Minamino, which, you know, recognisable senior players. But that at the time was seen as a madly rotated team. What I'm proposing is a much more radical solution than that, but it will be, it will be interesting to know, because he's talking about, we're taking a game at a time. Both Van Dijk and Klopp mentioned that a couple of times in the post-match stuff at the weekend. You've got to keep our focus on the game that's in front of us. Luton is all, you know, Klopp was like, can I say, like, I don't want to waste people's time, don't waste my time, don't waste your time asking about the final. Luton is what we're going to be talking about in the next one, and then we'll think about what comes. And we know that to be true, Chloe, from how Klopp has always managed. But also, we know the clock gets handed a whether it's a spreadsheet or whatever that says here's who you can and you can't play. And given that we took Darwin Núñez off at half time in that game to be careful with him, I just can't see a world where they're running any risks of any more of the really important lads for this one.
Yeah, but well, you saw that with Ryan Gravenberch when we seemingly had enough midfielders the other day where he didn't risk him at all. It's really hard because it's two games and then you can say to the lads, yous are all having Southampton off. Like, yous can have Southampton off. You've got that you know, the midweek off. But also saying that it's these lads want to win absolutely everything. And just because you go toe-to-toe with Manchester City doesn't mean you're going to win the league. You might very well lose out by a point again. And then there's another competition that actually you could have had a really good chance in once you beat Southampton. And that's another piece of silverware that these lads would all have wanted to win. So it's really hard to manage expectations and manage playing time and try and get them through it. But the thing I think Jürgen Klopp will be saying is the final is a thing in itself in terms of you've got to win that because that's, you know, it's a taste of what it could be like to galvanise the squad to go and win even more trophies come the end of the season. But also winning more trophies at the end of the season, if you don't pick up the three vital points at Luton at home, then you can't forget about it because you're still in the running. But that's a massive, massive blow. And mentally, that can take a toll on the players as well, because Luton at home, you shouldn't be losing to. You know, if it was a much... If like you, someone said earlier, Brighton at home, oh, it's a really tough game. But Luton, it's seen as a game where you really should win that. So Jürgen's got quite a lot of work to do, but what I'd be telling the players is it's two more games, lads, and then I'm giving you know, the midweek off. You can have that week off up until the next game, and I'd try and bring in, look, I'm sound with the McConnell coming in, and you rest on one of Endo or Maka. I absolutely love Kwanzaa. I'm sound with bringing him in. Harvey Elliott, putting him up top, I love that, and I think he deserves a start as well. The problem comes is if you actually get an injury to one of the players, it's like an arte, right? Yeah, there's no one who can change for you, lads. So in the next couple of weeks, you're actually going to go to the well again. Yeah. And we know what happens to players like an arte if they play too many times. So yeah, it's a really nervous time for Liverpool. But is everyone aiming for the City game? Like, who is potentially back for that City game? Because
I
understand what you're saying, but like, everyone was like, that Chelsea game's when everyone's going to come back, and I saw about three players back and they're not back. They've gone again.
Trent's a big one for the City game, isn't he? I think we're not sure about Alisson yet. It's a buzz line maybe for the final this weekend, more than likely on the bench. Curtis Jones, I don't think he's a million miles away. I don't think his timeline's going to be too bad.
Salah won't be used midweek, will he? He'll be safe for the final if he's fit for the final.
You might even just put him on the bench to make Luton chip.
Well, no, but this is the point. But this is the point I'm making is that you've got the power of Anfield on your side. We could put it to any team out and say, hold the line for 45 minutes. You know, we did it. You can go back to Stoke away in Klopp's first season, you know, starting Ben Woodburn and Trent, and then Bobby and Coutinho. They can't do the 90, but they can do 45. Yeah. Go on, have a 45 minute chase of this one. Even if you're a goal down or whatever, you'd be backing yourself in both of those matches, really. If they were the other way round, or we had this Forest away game in replacement of either of them, I'd be a little bit more concerned. But as I say, with the cup final in between, very much the sort
also,
of biggie,
like,
there.
To go to sort of follow it down your route, Klopp knows us so well that if he put out a team of kids, could you imagine the atmosphere at Anfield?
Yeah,
it would be well more up for it than if he just played the starting 11 on a Wednesday night against Luton.
Totally agree with
and
that.
And he might harness a little bit of that. He might just know, as you say, he'll know that, and he might just try and harness that, because it's a needs must situation for me now. It really is. And I just think the way I would go about it, and I get your point of view, is asking the same 11, 12, 13, 14 lads just to go to the well for the next 2 weeks or for the next week or so, whatever it is. But I personally would look to sort of go again and just add a couple more lads to the 14, 15, 16, make it a McConnell, a Jadon Dans, a Trey Nyoni, a Kay Gordon, and say, okay, we've lost three or four. We're going to replace them with these three or four. Let's just work from this squad now.
Yeah. It's an interesting one. I'd be fascinated to see what he goes for. But the big question is, what are we going to go for? Should we try our best and do a unified 11 for this one?
Okay.
So it's going to be Kelleher in goal.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, you sure?
Yeah. Okay, Adrian in goal.
No, you put Adrian on the bench to put the shit up Luton.
It's going to be two goalies on the bench, so Morozek as well, obviously. Callaghan in goal.
Right back's actually hard.
Joe Gomez.
Joe Gomez is the thing.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Going to need, I guess, some minutes.
And Baddy might need some minutes off.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'd
Kostas is back.
I think Kostas plays. Yeah.
You think Kostas? Yeah. I mean, that makes it that Klopp did reference Robertson had probably played a little bit more than he would have liked since he's come back.
100%. I think Kostas plays.
Okay, well, we'll see. Let's pencil these in, shall we, rather than go with indelible ink on this just yet. So Kostas left back.
Yeah.
Yep.
Bradley or Gomez right back?
Gomez.
I'm going Gomez.
Does Virgil play this game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kwanzaa is the one that comes in.
Yeah.
I'll have to admit, I was too busy thinking. What did we say right back then?
Gomez.
Cool. So Bradley's wrapped in cotton wool.
Yep.
Our young academy right back is in cotton wool for the League Cup final. Go ahead.
I think Bradley plays, to be honest.
I'd love it if he does, but I'm just a little too scared that he'd get injured.
It is a question of like Gomez. Is that because Gomez is starting the final in place of him?
No, because I play Gomez left back.
In this game,
yeah. No Tsimikas.
Okay. I've been Kostas in.
Okay.
I honestly, my left back pecking order now.
I know it is.
Is Robertson, Gomez, Tsimikas.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Tsimikas doesn't play football anymore.
Sorry, mate.
Really? Yeah. In that instance.
It's on you to decide.
And my pecking order for right back is now Trent, Bradley, Gomez. Whereas it was at the start of the season, obviously just Gomez.
Yeah. I'm going Gomez left back. Although I do actually think it'll be Tsimikas left back, Gomez
right back. That doesn't sound like you're backing out.
The two choices presented, unified across that. I'm not going to start throwing in my X factors off the top of that. We could have all done our own. Sam.
We still can.
We're too far down this path.
So we have a back five of sorts.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just seven of them.
Wataru Endo.
Yeah.
Ooh.
No, I'd
Alexis McAllister or James McConnell?
McConnell.
I think McConnell could start this.
Yep, same.
Bradley.
Play him anyway. Is that good? McConnell?
Yeah. Okay, I'll go McConnell, yeah.
Okay.
I'm with you.
Good start this.
Two midfielders ahead of him. Alexis McAllister will be one.
Gravenberch would be the other. Yeah.
You could go Harvey Elliott.
Harvey Elliott.
Oh, hang on. Okay, well, we'll again pencil. We'll come back to this.
Yeah.
Diaz?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gakpo?
Yeah.
Elliott?
Yeah.
Mm. That's my front three.
Okay. You want to say Kay Gordon?
My only...
Before we dive in,
go on.
What does that leave us on the bench?
Nothing.
So that leaves us Endo on the bench.
Endo on the bench.
Tsimikas on the bench.
No, Tsimikas is starting. Yeah.
No, we've decided on Gomez.
Did we? Yes, we did.
I thought, haven't you pencilled it in?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you check
your mind pencil.
Which is fucking blunt, yeah. By the way.
I'm right with the rubber end. So that leaves with either one of Tsimikas, Gomez, or Bradley, effectively, is likely to be on the bench.
Yeah.
One of Endo. Endo. Almost, if McConnell starts Endo, okay. Definitely on the bench. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, we're giving three options for every position, though.
I'm just working on potentials of who's on the bench from this, Chris. Just run with me on it, will you? Come on. We could have written this down. We haven't. Let's try and make it as easy on each other as possible. Depending on fitness, we'll just presume Salah's wrapped in cotton wool for this one and maybe Darwin.
Yeah.
Kay Gordon,
Bobby Clark.
Bobby Clark.
Yeah.
How many? That's not a lot. I don't think we've got enough.
Was Kwanzaa on the bench?
Kwanzaa, Kanate, maybe just off the bench.
So Robbo, Kanate, Defo.
We're probably missing
Endo, Clark.
Yeah.
Christ. Gabe Gordon.
Yeah.
You got the keepers.
Adriana Morozek, so we need two more to make the subs bench.
Lewis Kumas, maybe. And then one of the other
fullbacks. Okay, it's all. Tight, innit?
Let's just bring Conor Bradley on at right wing. 70 minutes in.
If Salah's fit, I think he's a break glass solution on the bench.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah.
I think one of him or Nunes will be on will be on the bench for this.
Could both be.
Salah will probably need, unless it's just like he's an absolute no-no, he'll need a few minutes just to make sure he's got rhythm for the final, I guess.
Yeah, the plan was probably 30, 60, 90. It went 60. It might go 15.
Yeah.
And then 90.
An hour of mutual prayer amongst the staff, and then, yeah, get him ready for the final. Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
I mean, I've got no idea what we picked. So.
I'm just glad, and this is no disrespect, and famous last word, I'm just glad it's Luton at home.
No, but
I'm sorry, it's true. I may as well say it because it's what I think to
You'd
be the
have
case.
To say it, though.
No, I did, because I fought it and I've got a microphone.
The only teams.
God, if I said everything I thought. That's
true, that's the right. Only teams with worse away record this season.
I'd rather not.
Nottingham Forest, Burnley, Fulham and Sheffield United.
Let's do Luton. If this was City away and we just named that squad, we'd be just done, wouldn't we? But it's not. So it's fine.
It's a game of football. And there's fine. Yeah. No, look, but it's footy. You don't get to either put your best 11 out every week. And it's Liverpool. You only get to put your second best 11 out. We just create opportunities for more heroes to present themselves. The Champions League winning season, 2004-2005. Neil Mellor is not meant to come in and score against Arsenal. That's not what's meant to happen. That wasn't in anyone's plan when the season started. And we've seen this already with Quanta. We've seen it with the likes of Bradley. Someone like Bobby Clark or Kate Gordon, it's going to be interesting if they can step up in the next couple of weeks. And obviously, you mentioned it already, Gakpo, the one who's most set to benefit from Diogo Jota's situation is Cody Gakpo. Grab him Bertram Jones and Gakpo from there, because it's almost like become the forgotten man at Liverpool. He was amazing in the back half of last season, and this has been, for a lad who's got 10 goals in all comps, okay, but it's not been up to that levels for him. So yeah, I think it's a big chance for Cody to
It's mad though, isn't it, because you talk about, we've spoken for years about Diogo Jota and how he's not really involved in the game, and then he scores. Is it just what Gakpo does? We just don't talk about him.
Because he does it in the League Cup normally. But these are the things where, particularly with the cup final looming, you think Thiago gets injured in the warm-up 2 years ago. Yeah. Harvey Elliott then gets drafted into the bench, having not even been selected, and then scores a penalty in the shootout. Someone like, a month ago, 6 weeks ago, whatever, no one was picking Conor Bradley for a League Cup final. They just weren't. And, certain number of these players, nobody would have been picking Cody Gakpo. Everyone would have had everyone else ahead of him. Yeah. Life, the universe presents you with opportunities. It's on you to take them. So yeah, I'd rather be in this situation right now. I'd rather it not get worse, Liverpool. If we can all agree that it cannot get worse,
draw a line in the sand here.
Yes, yeah.
You're not allowed to get injured anymore.
Stop more people getting injured and just carry on from here. We can hopefully be okay.
You know what I will say is though, I am excited for the atmosphere, because when the Reds need us, that's when we show up.
Yeah.
And if you put out a squad like that. All of us inside that stadium are going to understand why, and we're going to know this team's going to need us even more now than ever. So the atmosphere should be good.
2-1-0 wins at either side. In fact, the 3-1-0 wins for the next three games, at 4 when you count Nottingham Forest away at the end of that, I honestly don't give a shit. This is the grind now.
Yeah.
Get through and see if you can, as you said, Chris, get to the international break and see what comes back. See what you can have for Man City. Because, look, it's the knife edge that we're on, isn't it? We want that City game to be a chance for us to put real daylight between us and Man City. But yeah, ultimately, we need to talk about that. We're going to talk about Man City stumbling at the hands of Chelsea, Arsenal being rampant, and I don't know whether you've looked at the agenda, but I had it in late. Manchester United, are they starting to get their act together above pitch level and on the pitch as well? Bias Football Podcast, come and join us over on redmenplus.com for that one immediately after this. Should be good fun. Thank you so much for watching, listening to the podcast. Do leave a 5-star review if you're on podcasting apps. Leave a like on YouTube, and yes, we shall see you for more Redmen Originals goodness, hopefully with Liverpool with the first piece of silverware tucked under their wings this time next week.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.